This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
All you faithful, faithless, and godless goddesses, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Godless goddesses, what about us guys? Why did you say...
We are marketing a new t-shirt at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, suggested by Katie Daniel, one of our staffers, who said... One of the first things she said to me when I interviewed her was that she liked to call herself a godless goddess, and it's very cute.
And purple
imprint on lavender.
And so. It's available now?
Yes, it is.
It's online?
From FFRF.org.
I'm Dan Barker, and this is the weekend of July the 24th, 2010. Free Thought Radio is broadcasting in Madison, Wisconsin, and airing also in Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, and Monterey, and of course, podcasting to listeners everywhere in the universe.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation is a 501c3 tax-deductible educational charity working to promote non-theism and to keep state and church separate. And we have over 15,500 members in North America. We should be 50,000. We'd love to have you join us.
And do you have to be atheist to join the group?
No, we are a free thought umbrella. Our members can call themselves whatever they like, but we like to joke that we all disbelieve in the same God.
So atheists and agnostics.
Rationalists, skeptics, secular humanists, you name it, we have them.
We got a joke this week. I ran out of all my good jokes in the first 50 shows or so, and so I've been asking listeners to send them in. And member Bill Dusenberry sent a funny joke.
Didn't he bill it as this is the best lawyer joke ever?
Yeah, I think he did, yeah. You know, in the past we picked on ministers and theocrats and all that, and today we're going to talk a little bit about the law. So for a change of pace, I'm going to tell Bill the joke that Bill Dusenberry sent me, the best lawyer joke in the world. The United Way realized that it had never received a donation from the city's most successful lawyer. So a United Way volunteer paid the lawyer a visit in his lavish office. The volunteer opened the meeting by saying, "Our research shows that even though your annual income is over $2 million, you don't give a penny to charity. Wouldn't you like to give something back to your community through the United Way?" The lawyer thinks for a minute and he says, "First, did your research also show you that my mother is dying after a long, painful illness, and she has huge medical bills that are far beyond her ability to pay?" Embarrassed, the United Way rep mumbles, "No, I didn't know that." "Secondly," says the lawyer, "did it show that my brother, a disabled American veteran, is blind? He's confined to a wheelchair. He's unable to support his wife and his 6 children?" The stricken United Way rep begins to stammer an apology, but is cut off again. "Thirdly, did your research also show you that my sister's husband died in a dreadful car accident, leaving her penniless with a mortgage and 3 children, one of whom is disabled and another who has learning disabilities requiring an array of private tutors?" The humiliated United Way rep, completely beaten, says, "I'm so sorry, I had no idea." And the lawyer says, "So, if I didn't give any money to them, what makes you think I'd give any to you?"
Okay, so that's our pick on attorney joke. And actually, the reality these days is very grim for new grads. I mean, we are seeing some and working with some out of law school. The economy has hit them very hard, but there are many very nice, talented law students and new grads looking for work.
Well, we get to meet the best of them.
Yeah, that kind of leads us to our guest today, who's a law student. On the second half of today's show, we'll have the pleasure of talking with Sam Grover, who is FFRF's summer intern, and he's been doing great work for us, and he spoiled us, in fact, and we're going to miss his rapid response time to our many requests to him. Sam is attending Boston University School of Law. He's a highly interesting and capable young man and non-believer. Stay tuned for that interview.
For the first half of Free Thought Radio, we want to report on some timely news and then some commentary on this shocking and highly distasteful statement a week ago by the Vatican, which said that ordaining women as priests is as grave as a priest raping a 12-year-old. Stay tuned for our reaction to that.
This summer, FFRF's hardworking staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, has sent letters of warning to three city councils in South Carolina, so we want to talk about that for a minute. Listeners who heard our show last week may recall the very memorable comments and prayer by the mayor of Woodruff. He was praying to Jesus, and that was one of the offending government bodies.
And Jesus.
He was vowing to keep breaking that law.
Rebecca also sent similar letters about illegal prayer to Mayor Fred Kavanaugh and the city council in Aiken, South Carolina, A-I-K-E-N, Aiken, South Carolina. Transcripts of their prayers show that nearly all are Christian in nature with, quote, continual reference to Jesus.
And that complaint has received a lot of coverage, several TV stations, Associated Press. Let's listen to a report by a local TV station.
Hello, everyone. I'm Paige Tucker. Thanks for joining us. The separation of church and state is and has always been a touchy subject in our nation's history. Now it's hitting close to home as the city of Aiken faces possible litigation for praying before council meetings. 26 News' Christine O'Donnell is straight to the point tonight with how the city is changing the way they pray.
Paige, even in the Bible Belt, city council members are learning they have to be careful how they express their religion, especially during public meetings.
While 100-year-old crosses sprinkle the sky, city council members are learning to keep their religion to themselves. Mayor Fred Kavanaugh received a letter from a national nonprofit organization asking council members to remove prayer from public meetings. One of the city's attorneys, Benjamin Moore, explains this is about keeping the separation of church and state.
The idea is to have a prayer that is, from the court's perspective, generic.
The letter, sent by the Freedom From Religion Foundation out of Madison, Wisconsin, provided examples of 11 different prayers said at recent council meetings.
The mayor basically asked a member of council to do the prayer.
The complaint originated from a concerned Aiken resident and taxpayer. The letter advises, in an effort to keep church and state separate, the council should refrain from addressing God and saying, quote, in Jesus' name.
A city or any other political subdivision, we're not supposed to promote or endorse one particular religion because of the Establishment Clause.
This is where there's some overlap, which makes it difficult for council members to avoid a religion-specific prayer.
One of the concerns with some of the council members is knowing some of these parameters about doing the prayer more generically. There is a little bit, hey, I don't want to slip up and go into the mode of how I usually pray.
Moore says the city's legal team is in the process of writing up a series of generic prayers in order to pay respect and still obey the law.
At this point, no lawsuit has been filed, Moore says the organization is just making sure the city of Aiken is aware of possible litigation. Christine O'Donnell, 26 News.
And we have a similar problem in another city in South Carolina, with government prayers occurring in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where the Freedom From Religion Foundation has a federal lawsuit over a school violation, by the way, in the courts.
So we'll have to see. We have hundreds of complaints by our members and by members of the public over city councils opening with illegal prayer, especially Christian prayer, all around the country. We're going to do a little map at our website soon where you can see all of these. We'll pinpoint all of the locations where we have taken complaints.
You won't be able to see the map.
Right. And I think that we're reaching some kind of tipping point where we're just going to have to sue over it because the educational letters seem to be falling on deaf ears.
And later in today's show, we have an interview with our highly productive and impressively intelligent student legal intern.
Before we introduce you to intern Sam Grover, we want to take a few minutes to react to the Vatican's gross statement that women priests would be as bad as pedophile priests. And we'll go out with a teaser from an ABC, some news coverage over the fallout of the Vatican statement. And this is featuring an interview with Bridget Mary Meehan.
Bridget Mary Meehan is one of five American women ordained as part of a Catholic reform movement and excommunicated by the Vatican.
They're equating both as criminal acts. Therefore, this example of misogyny and patriarchy and really taking on women as the enemy in the church.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. So we'll give listeners our reaction to the Vatican's equating of women as priests being the equivalent of a priest who molests on the second segment of Free Thought Radio, right after this short break.
I'm State Senator Ernie Chambers from Nebraska. I'm on Free Thought Radio, which is like an oasis in the Sahara Desert.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, and I'm here in the studio with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We've been talking about some state church entanglements, which the Freedom From Religion Foundation is trying to resolve around the country. Now we'd like to talk about what seems to be an unsolvable problem, the terminal foot-in-the-mouth disease of the Vatican.
Yes, a little more than a week ago, the Vatican held a press conference and issued a statement saying the ordination of women as priests would be as grave an offense as pedophilia in the ranks of its priesthood. The headline that I read in our local paper, Vatican Ordaining Women as Bad as Pedophilia, might have been written by the editors of The Onion. It was hard to take this for real, but it is for real.
The satirical newspaper, The Onion. Yeah.
The guy at the Vatican in charge of handling sexual abuse cases came up with a list of what he called the, quote, more grave delicts, unquote, or offenses. And these include sexual abuse and pornography. I got to find that list. Attempted ordination of women. Of course, it's not lawful to ordain them. Heresy, apostasy, and schism. So the Catholic dogma is that ending sex discrimination by permitting women to finally become priests, and of course nearly every other mainstream Christian denomination does permit the ordination of women now, that this would be as evil as the criminal premeditated predatory assaults against children by their male priests.
Was that list like in an order of seriousness is what it was?
Well, it started with the sexual abuse of children.
And then
ordained women were next.
And then that's above heresy and apostasy. The Vatican said, quote, sexual abuse and pornography are more grave delicts, D-E-L-I-C-T-S. Have you heard that word before?
I don't know. I guess it's their
crime,
word for
a crime or something. They are more grave delicts. They are an egregious violation of moral law. Attempted ordination of women is grave, but on another level, it is a wound that is an attempt against the Catholic faith on the sacramental orders.
So in other words, having women priests is apparently even worse than harboring pedophile priests. And what's a moral violation against a child compared to the horror of a woman at the altar, according to the Catholic priest? And I say those 59% of U.S. Catholics who favor the ordination of women need to vote with their feet. Why do liberal, thoughtful Catholics continue to cling to this corrupt, antediluvian institution? Women don't just hold up half the sky. We hold up the entire pillars of the Catholic Church with faithful support and church attendance.
So the people that are sitting in the pews in those churches, are some of them are good people, well-meaning people, but they are a part of the problem. Just by being there, they are lending their credibility, not just their money, but they are helping to prop up the prestige of this corrupt organization.
And why would anyone wish to be on the side of a church which has institutionalized child abuse and its cover-up and now compounds its injury to women by the insult of declaring that their inclusion in the priesthood would be just as bad as a priest molesting that 12-year-old? The Catholic Church is pathetically blind to its own sins. It doesn't require mandatory reporting of suspected crimes to civil authorities by bishops. Still, it calls the prospect of a woman priest as bad as a male priest who has actually used his man of God prestige to systematically prey on, rape, molest, and pillage minors. And I think the timing of this announcement is tremendously poor because the Vatican made this utterly odious comparison the very same week that the world learned that the former bishop of Bruges in Belgium had systematically sexually abused his own nephew for years. The New York Times reported about 12 days ago that the 42-year-old nephew of Roger Van Heulu helped to force his resignation in April by threatening to go public with tales of the abuse. And since this bishop's abuse in Belgium, nearly 500 Belgian people have come forward to report they have been also abused by priests. This is a huge issue there.
So according to this Catholic Church logic, a woman priest would be just as immoral as that bishop, who wasn't just a pedophile and child molester, but an incest abuser.
So I would ask, is the reason the Catholic Church attracts and apparently is run by so many perverts because the church perverts human nature by devaluing women? And it has very clearly devalued the institutionalized sexual abuse of children by its rank and file men of God, by somehow comparing them to the idea of women priests, which is such a nice thing. In other words, it doesn't seem to be treating the sex abuse of children as at all serious.
We found this clip from about a year ago by Bill Maher on his show, which seems timely since we're talking about how the Catholic Church continues to get away with this scandal.
In fact, whenever a cult leader sets himself as God's infallible wingman here on Earth, lock away the kids. Which is why I'd like to tip off law enforcement to an even larger child-abusing religious cult. Its leader also has a compound. And this guy not only operates outside the bounds of the law, but he used to be a Nazi and he wears funny hats. That's right, the Pope is coming to America this week, and ladies, he's single. Now, I know what you're thinking. Bill, you can't be saying that the Catholic Church is no better than this creepy Texas cult. For one thing, altar boys can't even get pregnant. But really, what tripped up the little cult on the prairie was that they only abused hundreds of kids, not thousands all over the world. Cults get raided, religions get parades. How does the Catholic Church get away with all of their buggery? Volume, volume, volume. If you have a few hundred followers and you let some of them molest children, they call you a cult leader. If you have a billion, they call you Pope. It's like if you can't pay your mortgage, you're a deadbeat. But if you can't pay a million mortgages, you're Bear Stearns and we bail you out.
Bill Maher got a lot of flack for this. Catholics, including Bill Donahue, called for an apology. And he kind of admitted that as a 14-year-old, maybe the Pope wasn't really a Nazi at the time. But he did not apologize for the remarks he made on that show.
But and speaking of that, the current Pope had been conscripted at the age of 14 into the Nazi Party during World War II. So he was a part of it, but I guess Maher was conceding he didn't have a lot of power.
So women, priests, and pedophiles are both criminals. How will the Catholic Church be able to outdo this caricature of itself? We hate to think.
And I think this is something that people should not underplay. This is the reason why the Catholic Church continues to be so out of touch with reality, and why it has so inappropriately responded to the, you know, criminal predation on hundreds of thousands of children by its rank-and-file priests. So we'll have a change of topic for the second half of Free Thought Radio. We're looking forward to introducing our listeners to Sam Grover, FFRF's conscientious and productive summer legal intern.
Hi, my name is James Hubble. I'm from Springfield, Missouri, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker.
And the Freedom From Religion Foundation's legal staff has been growing. We now have two full-time staff attorneys, and we've talked with Rebecca on our show before, and a couple months ago with Patrick, right? And we also have, for the summer, a summer legal intern. His name is Sam Grover, and we're very pleased to have him in the studio with us today, which is a nice way to do an interview. Sam Grover grew up in Vermont. He graduated from Wesleyan University in 2008. He's enrolled in the Boston University School of Law, and he's going into his second year. Sam previously worked with former Justice Unity Dow of the High Court of Botswana in 2008 when he went there, and I'm sure he'll talk about that experience a bit with us today. He's interested in constitutional law, educational law, public service, racial and LGBT rights, reproductive justice, and environmental law. And we're fortunate that the Establishment Clause has caught his eye. Sam Grover, just this last few weeks, has been a big impact on our office, including the fact that his impact is so big because he's 6 feet 6 inches, is that it?
Yes, that is.
He's making waves, 6 foot 6 inches tall, and he's been a good sport working at a lot of our short desk with these little mini laptop computers. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Sam.
Well, thank you. Hi, Annie, Laurie, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
It's a real privilege to have you with us for the summer. We wish we could Shanghai you somehow to stay in Madison a little bit longer.
He has to graduate from law school.
That's true. I will be much more useful to you and, I guess, to anyone else I work for if I actually have that law degree.
Oh, darn it.
So
yeah. Now, Sam, I'm trying to remember in all these courses of different emails. You contacted us this spring saying that you would like to do a summer clerkship for us.
Yes, that's right. I found out about your organization through one of my professors at Boston University, Jay Wexler, who I believe you had on the show back in March.
About his new book.
Holy Hullabaloos.
Yeah.
That's right, where he went on a road trip around the country to various church state case places and wrote about them, including, where is it, New Glarus?
Where he came here for the Amish, that lawsuit. Right.
And so being out here in Madison, I haven't been to New Glarus myself, but I have managed to sample their spotted cow beer from that area.
So before you actually came into our office, you had read about it in his book then, because part of his book, the road tour was coming into our office.
Yes, yes. And his description in the book, though accurate, does not really give the atmosphere justice. I found the it's very homey in the Freedom From Religion Foundation office.
And relaxed and consensus.
It's getting a little crowded. But we have you in the only remaining spot where we could stick a desk and hope that you'd have some place to put files, and that's the library.
Well, yeah, but I'm not complaining. It's turned out to be the biggest office in the in the place, in the two-story building there.
And every once in a while, we join you for a legal counsel.
Yeah.
We have the big table.
That's
there.
Right, the huge conference table. So Jay Wexler must have known somehow that you were interested in constitutional or First Amendment issues then.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I had approached him because he's well known for his views on religious freedom and, free thought. And he teaches a couple courses on law and religion at the school. So I approached him asking what organizations were out there that could promote some of my viewpoints.
And what was very special is that you got your own funding. You found your own way. You just arrived. You needed no help. I mean, you had your own apartment figured out. And it's not costing the foundation anything. So this is really wonderful.
That's true.
So thank you very much.
It's more or less like the skies opened up and I just descended.
And our first legal intern, Sarah Brosh, did the same thing from Fordham. She found her own funding, just arrived on our doorstep and just was like a secular, elf.
Non-godsend.
Legal elf or a brownie or doing all the work. So we are very grateful.
So that takes
a lot of initiative.
I hope you didn't take offense at that joke I said at the beginning of the show about lawyers, because you were not included in that class.
Oh, no. I will, in fact, never be included in the class of lawyers that makes $2 million a year. I'm fairly certain of that.
You're guaranteeing it if you're going to go to work in constitutional law. So you're going to law school for the issues, basically, then, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think that a law degree is one of the best ways to have an impact on whatever issue or issues it is that you want to address in your life and career.
So you're a non-believer. Isn't this something like having a calling, like having a higher calling? How can an atheist have a calling?
Well, I think it's everyone's duty in their life to find their own calling. And I think mine probably has to do with First Amendment rights.
Wow.
Now, I think there's been quite a nice cross-section of, you've done a constitutional sampler so far at your work this summer. Do you want to kind of summarize some of the things that you've been doing?
Oh, it's true. There's a never-ending onslaught of complaints.
Yes, onslaught is the right word.
Yes, from our precious members and also from the communities around the country. And I've worked on a lot of different issues. I've done a lot of stuff on religious use of public libraries and religious use of public schools in general. I've done stuff on baccalaureate services and government prayer. I actually was fortunate enough to get a chance to help out with the Spartanburg and Aiken letters.
Oh, that thing we played earlier.
Yeah, that's right. You drafted them, right?
Yes, yeah.
And
so,
it's like a team effort because we have students who usually do the transcription. And that's funny when they're doing the transcriptions, there's quite a bit of howling and, oh, you got to hear this,
Yeah.
But then, and then it wends its way up.
So that news report we played earlier, that's all Sam's fault?
Yeah.
you're the devil up.
all of that positive press that you received. Yes.
And so and that is what we do all sort of day in and day out. But you had a very interesting first legal victory you wanted to talk about, which was a baccalaureate. Maybe you should define that term for listeners.
Oh, well, they're two different things. I don't think I've actually had a legal victory on the baccalaureate services, though.
I'm sorry. But we may. We will.
That's pending.
Right.
Let me talk about baccalaureate services a little bit. One of the things I've learned working here is that my impression of what is religion and religious growing up in an at the very least agnostic family in Vermont is very different than what the rest of the country views as religious. My high school actually had a baccalaureate service, and for me, what that meant was that we went to a church as the senior class, and we received awards for things like sports and music and acting. But that is not what a baccalaureate service is in the rest of the country, where it still takes place in a church mostly, but sometimes in an actual public school. And it's all about prayer and praise to Jesus. And it has much more religious overtones.
Did you get an award for basketball?
I did actually. Being 6'6" is a big asset in a small town in Vermont.
Huh.
Yeah. So anyway, I've done a lot of work on baccalaureate services. I've sent out 3 different letters of complaint, and
you did a lot of research too.
Yes, and actually that research will end up in an FAQ on the FFRF.org website.
The legal website where we have frequently asked questions. So we're looking forward to getting that one up.
Yep. Okay. And we have received a positive reply from one of the schools I sent about the baccalaureate service. And I wouldn't yet call it a legal victory.
But it's getting there.
It's pending.
Because the law's on our side there.
Exactly.
Well, if nothing else, everything we do is educational at minimum. Somebody's reading the letters and somebody's taking note of complaints. So
yes.
So I think when we come back from the break, well, I also should say, we didn't say, that among your other duties, you have become a t-shirt model.
That's right.
Which one did you wear for the...
I wore the Thomas Paine quote.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
We have 4 new t-shirts and we needed to get pictures for our website and catalog and to promote them. And yesterday we got your picture taken. It looks nice.
So put that on your resume someday. Well, we'll be right back. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And after this break, we'll finish our conversation with Sam Grover, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's summer legal intern, to get more on his perspective and his views.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Mark from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm the author of the book Christian No More, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're speaking with Sam Grover, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's current summer legal intern.
And I think that we were talking about one of your first legal victories at the end of the last break, and you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I would love to. So this is something else I learned working at FFRF, was that there are these programs around the country at public schools where teachers put flyers for various school activities and then also non-school events in the backpacks or cubbies of their students. And a problem came up at, well, many of these schools, but specifically a school district in Washington State, where a religious organization was advertising through this flyer system at the school, and there was no disclaimer on the flyers to show that the school didn't endorse the religious viewpoint. And we sent a letter of complaint to the school district.
You drafted?
Yes, which I drafted that letter. And we received a really positive response back from the school saying that that particular flyer was inappropriate, that they should have had a disclaimer, and that they're going to look over their entire flyer program to make sure that that sort of thing doesn't happen again.
Yeah, it was. And I remember that letter. They really agreed publicly that they had made a mistake. That is a very rare admission. So congratulations. And to get a nice response like that. And we don't think public schools should be sending home flyers. It's just too much work for the teachers. And
that's true. Or at the least, restrict it to school events.
Right. Something that they really have to know about. Now, another thing that you've been working with on us on Foundation Business is the National Day of Prayer, which is the big appeal before the Seventh Circuit. We won at the federal level, having the National Day of Prayer declared unconstitutional. So what have you been doing on that?
Well, this has been, of course, a really exciting process for everyone at the organization. I have been working on some things that have come up in briefs from the government side of this case, basically claiming that there are other holidays out there that are religious in nature, like the National Day of Prayer, and where the government asks people to pray.
Like Memorial Day or
exactly,
Thanksgiving like, or...
Yeah. Those are the two big ones that come up a lot, even though Judge Crabb talked a lot about Thanksgiving in her written decision.
And showing the differences. But so I remember I saw that in the Attorney General friend of the court brief, and I said to Sam, say, would you like to try to look up the history and the laws on Thanksgiving?
Yes.
And Memorial Day. And boy, did I get speedy responses, and it was very good news.
Well, so. Yeah. So this is actually another one of those things where growing up in an agnostic family in Vermont, I had no idea that Thanksgiving for most of the country is considered a religious holiday. Hmm. It never occurred to me that the person I was supposed to be giving thanks to was God. Thanksgivings in my household were always, my mom would have us go around the table and just tell each other what we were thankful for. Because, you know, even us free thinkers are thankful for things in life.
And thanking the cook.
Right, absolutely.
And did you thank the Native Indians upon whose land the state of Vermont now rests?
I was young at the time, so perhaps. But anyway, more to the point, the research I did revealed that far from being a religious holiday, Thanksgiving has a long history of having a secular element to it. For instance, for the past 145 consecutive years, the official presidential proclamation has been for Thanksgiving Day, not a day of prayer and thanksgiving, as it was back in the day.
Which, that's very significant legally.
Yes, it is. And in addition to that, not all of the presidential proclamations on Thanksgiving have even asked Americans to pray, as some of these court briefs have suggested. Obama in 2009 gave a completely secular proclamation, and there are a number of others, Carter in 1978, Ford in 75, Nixon in 69. And the history of Memorial Day for different reasons is just as strongly on our side of the argument.
You found out that Memorial Day was passed as a federal law in 1950.
Exactly.
And it was supplanting
Decoration Day.
Do you know whether Decoration Day was a federal holiday, or is that more of a state
tradition? I know that it was first proclaimed way back in 1868 by the Commander-in-Chief of the Grand Army of the Republic, John Logan. I don't know if it ever became an official holiday in the U.S., but I know that it was celebrated widely. And almost always for secular purposes of remembering fallen soldiers.
So the government's argument is bogus, that all of this is purely a religious celebration.
Well, and also there is some religious language in the 1950 law, but that was part and parcel of the McCarthy era, where everything, you know, all these religious violations were occurring.
That's true.
So it was a culmination of something that had been entirely secular, and nobody today thinks of Memorial Day as religious.
Right.
That language hasn't really been used. Nobody knows about it. It hasn't had an effect like the National Day of Prayer.
That's true.
But right. So your research has been phenomenal, and I really appreciate it. And your very fast turnaround, too.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
That's great.
I love helping out the organization however I can, and this is obviously a very high-profile case.
Yep, it's going to stay in the news. Now, do we have time to talk about Botswana? Yes, so tell us a little bit about the Botswana.
Oh, well, that was a really great experience. Unity Dow is a wonderful woman, a very progressive feminist in Botswana who basically helped overturn a sexist law prior to going onto the court. While I was there, I was able to help her out with some research for books that she's writing. She's an author as well, and I believe has since stepped down from the court to pursue those interests.
How long were you there?
I was there for 3 months and worked with her and her daughter, who's a lawyer who studied here in the States.
So you are quite the intrepid traveler, independent
from
researcher.
Botswana to Madison, Wisconsin. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for all your hard work.
Yes, and thanks for being our intern.
Well, and thank you for employing me for the summer.
And maybe, if I can borrow a word, maybe you might inspire some other cause-motivated young people to consider law as constitutional law for the good of the country. So thank you.
And now we need to talk about to Brian, our engineer producer. It's coming right up, the deadline for the AIDS bike ride.
That's right. It's the ACT ride. It's a local South Central Wisconsin AIDS charity ride that I'll be doing at this time next week, Saturday. I'll be in the middle of a 100-mile long day.
So how can people help?
The all the information about our ride, which was spawned from the national rides that go around for the last decade or so, can be found at actride.org, actride.org.
And how can someone sponsor you?
They could click on the donate button, and that'll take them to a separate website where they can search out Brian. I think I might be the only Brian that's on the website, and you can click on my page and give a donation, large or small, be welcome.
And Brian, what are your pledges?
Right now, I believe I'm at about 1,800. I was shooting for 3,000, but you can keep giving well into September. So as you hear this next week, even, you can keep giving. You know, if that works.
Go to the website. It's say it again.
actride.org, actride.org.
And this is Brian Turani, who's the engineer and producer of our show, who's also now an official spokesperson.
Ba-dum-bump.
Dun-dum-dum-dum. Thank you, Brian. If we couldn't do this show without you. We also want to thank our announcer. His name is Buzz Kemper. He works at Audio for the Arts, a recording studio. Free Thought Radio, this show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear the archives of all of our past shows, or you can sign up for our regular weekly podcast.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021 or ask for a free complimentary issue of our June-July issue of Free Thought Today. And tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday